All right, May.
Okay, back to the agent provocateur in Los Angeles. The San Francisco Chronicle, for those of you who missed the first part of this, carried an article this week called A Police Spy's Strange Story in Monday's Chronicle about his position in filtering various radical groups in Los Angeles. And the man is feeling guilty for what he's doing. He's got a man on death row that he turned informer on, and maybe these trials will be reversed now. But the final conclusion of the article, because he's charging the Los Angeles Police Department with every kind of mischief possible, framing people to say they murdered when they didn't, saying they're going to blow up the convention when they didn't plan to do it. The final comment is what is important. The whole thing is important to my dialogue on assassinations. But this is the final two sentences in the newspaper. Los Angeles Police Chief Edward M. Davis refused the members of his tax squad to be interviewed by the press because he said an investigation is in progress. But he said a Bolshevik has been working for 2 weeks to plant a false story involving the President of the United States and the Los Angeles Police Department. I think such a story would appear in Pravda, but I'm surprised to hear that the Los Angeles reporters are listening to the story. End quotes.
Bolshevik.
He said it was a Bolshevik. That cover story hasn't been used. I think J. Edgar Hoover used it, you know, like 30 years ago. It hasn't been used in 30 years. But nothing in the whole article or that I heard on the radio mentioned the President of the United States. So evidently, this Mr. Tackwood is talking about our President of the United States, Richard Nixon, in connection.
The United States I know of.
Yeah, the only one. He says this, and he mentions, see, the Los Angeles Chief of Police is defending himself against the very terrible charges that are being made in Los Angeles. But in his defense, he brings in a whole new ball game, because he says in the last 2 weeks, some Bolshevik is tying the Los Angeles Police Department to the President of the United States. Now, I have been, for the last 15 weeks, tying in the Los Angeles Police Department to the President of the United States, but I am not a Bolshevik. And I do want to say that this is the last desperate chance, and I'm going to show you that the agent provocateurs are tied up with the overthrow of our government and the Los Angeles Police Department, because on our very first broadcast, Gloria, on June 30th, when we were talking about the Pentagon Papers, I referred to Mr. Nixon. I said, he's not my president until I find out who killed Robert Kennedy. He may be your president, but he's not my president. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
And now it seems that the president is tied in with the Los Angeles Police Department. So in his hysterical comment or protection of himself, now that Chief of Police Davis said that. So let's say, well, who is Chief of Police Davis? I mentioned Robert Houghton of the Chief of Detectives with the evidence of the Sirhan case, because he's the one who came out with a book on the subject. But I'm going to refer again to a lawsuit, Superior Court of the State of California, number 978371, a complaint for disclosure of information. It was placed by Theodore Chirac, again, on behalf of himself and the residents of California. And we've referred to this many times on the air, but I'm going to repeat one part. It is against the Los Angeles Police Department. Edward M. Davis, individually and as chief of the police of the city of Los Angeles and a representative of the class of members of the Los Angeles Police Department, as well, these are the defendants in the suit, as well as Robert Houghton, deputy chief of the police, and Evel Younger as the district attorney of Los Angeles. They are named defendants in a lawsuit in Los Angeles to find out who killed Robert Kennedy and to get the evidence out on the table. And the suit reads that the people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. The people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. The people insist on remaining informed so that they may retain control over the instruments they have created. Now, end quote. We're going to continue to read the role that Edward Davis is mentioned in this suit as a defendant in the Los Angeles Police Department for holding information from the people of the United States I got a postcard at KLRB this week from some person asking me to talk about the election in 1972, the effect of the assassinations on the election, or my opinion of candidates. Let me say that in a democracy where you're not informed, you have no election at all. This is an election year, and it is my obligation to tell you that the chief of police, Los Angeles, came out this week and is suggesting that somebody is linking his police department with the president of the United States, and he's blaming a Bolshevik. I am not a Bolshevik. I love my country, and I want you to know the evidence exists of the ascendancy of Richard Nixon to the Los Angeles Police Department. Now, back to the suit where defendant Edward Davis is mentioned. The legal suit says defendant Los Angeles Police Department is the agency and the department of the city of Los Angeles in the state of California responsible for police protection of that city within the state of California and for police investigation of all crimes within that city. Said defendant does not have the right to decide what is good for them to people to know and what is not good for them to know. It is repeated again in the lawsuit. End quotes here. Chief of Police Davis is not responsible for sending men out to murder other men or for giving Ron Karanga weapons to shoot Panthers or to turn state's evidence to put a man on death row that didn't commit the crime. The police department is not there for that function. These are serious charges, and I'm going to tie them all the way up to the president of the United States because he mentioned the president. I didn't. The suit gets back at the fourth part of that lawsuit that I've said pertaining to Mr. Edward Davis. In quotes, defendant Edward Davis is the chief of police of that city, responsible for the supervision, control, regulation, and management of the police department and the investigation of all crimes committed within the city of Los Angeles. And in June 1968, as deputy chief of police, particularly that investigation in the murder of Senator Robert Kennedy on June the 5th, 1968, he is empowered and has a responsibility to set policy for and to make and enforce all necessary and desirable rules and regulations of said police department. He is sued individually and in his capacity as a representative of the members of the defendant police department who have carried out and continue to carry out a course of conduct which has suppressed and continues to suppress important, valuable, relevant information concerning the investigation into the murder of Senator Robert Kennedy by said police department, and which has and continues to deprive the citizens and residents of the state of California of the full and uncensored information concerning the assassination of Senator Robert Kennedy. End quotes. Let me say this week, we've talked about on the show about Will Wilson, the Assistant Attorney General of the entire United States in charge of all crime. And I mentioned the fact of his involvement in the stock fraud in Texas. And he was named in this $1 million swindle, the attorney for people who are up to their neck in a criminal case down there, a matter dealing with a lot of money and power in the state of Texas. Will Wilson was the Attorney General of the state of Texas. He was a Democrat who Richard Nixon selected under John Mitchell to become a Republican head of our Justice Department, just like John Connally was a Democrat, chosen to become Secretary of our Treasury. I've told you we have had a one-party system since the election of 1960. Democrats and Republicans, the boundary doesn't exist. We're talking about 1972 elections. We're talking about the murder of a candidate. We're talking about the Los Angeles Police Department. We're talking about our own state of California. And these are serious matters because the man who is in charge of that police department down there has brought up himself the name of the President of the United States. And somebody in Los Angeles, he says, in the last 2 weeks, is tying the police department to the president. So everyone who's out there listening, we talked about the Sirhan thing in L.A. today, don't let it drop. Keep your ears open. Keep your eyes open. Buy extra papers. If you don't take them, take them. It's better. And begin to read what's happening. Now, if Will Wilson can resign as the Assistant Attorney General of the United States, and he resigned, I don't say that he shouldn't even be subject to the same laws of what's going on in that thing in Texas. He should be prosecuted if he's guilty or had knowledge of what his clients were doing or helped them do it or find legal loopholes to get out of what they were doing. But our own Attorney General of the state of California is named as the defendant in a suit. And people like Angela Davis are asking for fair trials, and Rochelle McGee. How are these people going to get fair trials if the evidence is true that the police department and the district attorney down there are planting evidence against them? In the George Jackson thing is mentioned here now. If the Attorney General of our state is the defendant in a suit, he should either stand up to that case now or resign as the Attorney General of the state of California. If the Attorney General in Washington, second under Mitchell, steps down, then Evelyn Younger, as the defendant, must either answer the charges or step down, too. And I'll read you, just as long as I have a copy of that legal suit that is pending in Los Angeles, and I read you about Edward Davis, we'll go on to defendant Evelyn Younger. Quotes, defendant Evelyn Younger is, and at all times herein mentioned, has been the district attorney of the county of Los Angeles, state of California. Pardon me for interrupting once more. He was the district attorney of Los Angeles when the suit was filed. And even being named a defendant in a suit, he was elected the Attorney General of the state of California. That's how informed you are as to the election and who is running for office. Getting back to the suit, quotes, as such, he is its public prosecutor responsible for the prosecution of all public offenses. He is responsible for the supervision, control, regulation, and management of the Office of District Attorney, and each and every member thereof, and for the trial of all felonies committed within the County of Los Angeles, and particularly that trial known as the People of the State of California versus Sirhan Bishara Sirhan, alleging the murder of Senator Robert Kennedy. He is empowered and has the responsibility to set policy and enforce all necessary rules and regulations. He is sued individually. And in his capacity as representative of the members of the office of the district attorney who continue to carry out a course of conduct that has suppressed and continues to suppress important, valuable, relevant information concerning the investigation of the murder of Senator Robert Kennedy. And he continues to deprive the citizens and residents of the state of California of the full and uncensored information concerning that murder. Now, that is just part of the suit. It's a long suit. We could read it for 1 hour because people don't know that this suit even exists. I talked to a radio station in San Francisco this week. They don't know this exists. But this is a serious problem in the state of California. And if you want justice, you know, on a talk show this week, a gentleman called in. I think he was from Seaside. He found it very depressing to talk about political assassinations. And he said, why don't you just go home and relax and eat some blueberry cake? Because anybody who's nominated that represents the will of the people is going to be killed. So he says, just forget about it. You know, no Bobby Kennedys or anyone who comes along that represents our wishes is going to be killed. And I know the man was very flippant, but I know that there was a grain of sadness in what he was saying to just pick up the telephone and feel that gloomy about it. And I said, I tried to say, no, just stick with me and someday I'll meet you and we'll have a rally and we'll talk. And if the day comes that you walk down the street and some cop kills you, because of my research, he won't get away with that anymore because we will stay there now and defend you and those days will be over. They can just barge in and shoot you, you know, when you're in bed or asleep. And it's this terrible feeling that nobody is there speaking for us. And I think in order to get the confidence back to the people and the young people, we have to proceed with these trials. These men are defendants in a lawsuit in Los Angeles. And it's very timely that suit was filed in 1970, and it's still hanging in limbo. And it's not talking about bullets that were put in the wrong envelope. It goes into a lot of evidence. So as long as Chief of Police Davis, who's the defendant in a suit, brings of his own volition the fact that the president is being suggested. Now, in this particular case tied to the Los Angeles Police Department, let us find out what are the charges against the President of the United States in relation to the Los Angeles Police Department. How do we get that information? Now, Chief of Police Davis says that he isn't surprised that you'd hear that in Pravda, but certainly the Los Angeles reporters aren't listening. The reason he brought that up, and we've talked several shows, Glory, is about what's coming out of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union and Red China do not want Richard Nixon, Connally, Reagan, Rockefeller running our world, or Agnew. The elections are coming up, and they can see what's happening to this world. And this is why I think that Sputnik is publishing the articles on the assassination in Dallas now. They had an issue in July, we talked about in several shows. They had an issue in August 1971 tying the oil people and H.L. Hunt and the Dallas-Fort Worth area into the assassination of John Kennedy. Now, so ABC News this week, since we met, discussed a book which will be published from the Soviet Union saying that Lyndon Johnson killed John Kennedy. I've written to New York to get the name of that book. It'll be out soon. And Mao Zedong has an interview about the assassination of John Kennedy. Why are the communist countries, or Pravda, as Chief of Police Davis, talking about this? Because the facts of those 10 bullets in Los Angeles, the facts of the way our power changes hands, is so obvious to the communist countries that they are not going to stop talking about it. Now, they're going to ask us to come forward and explain who really runs the country, who really rules the country. And now I'm going to jump to another subject, because I have asked many times on this program with you, thinking out loud, who does run the United States of America? And we had a lot of funny jokes from our first broadcast in June about Bibi Rabosa always being with Richard Nixon and never leaving him and never leaving his side. And a lot of people never knew the name Bibi Rabosa until we got on the air. And it's really good, Gloria. We can talk these things, and I can talk about them and bring out new names. And remember the very first one on Bibi. So last week, there was a series of articles about Bibi Rabosa and his holding stolen stocks that belonged to the Avatan, and the FBI coming to him, and then all of a sudden he sold them, and about the land that he gets at a low price and sells at a huge profit. And the articles on Bibi Rabosa and Richard Nixon and Smathers in Florida were very serious. But something came out of those besides all the monetary gains they make, and that is when they wanted to trace the stolen stocks or how Rabosa was getting them or where the headquarters were, they traced it to a man. They traced it to a man in the Bahamas by the name of Mr. Sturgeon. And then the newspaper article went on to say that Mr. Sturgeon was not a man, he was a group of men. And that Mr. Rabosa was receiving stock from a Mr. Sturgeon, and the FBI or investigators found it was a group of men. Now, I know I have received documents from the Southwest, and I've spoken about what goes down at Coy Bay in Jamaica. There's a group of Solidaris. Those are white Russians, the people that associated with Lee and Rena Oswald in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, John Connally, people from the German cartels that were rebuilt after World War II. Down in Jamaica, there is something very heavy going on in attempt to rule the power of the world. And whenever Richard Nixon has a hot spot on who to appoint for a particular job, or he's in a bind, he's always airlifted down to Jamaica. I have said that. Now, Richard Nixon is the president of the United States, and if any of his closest friends, like Bibi Rabosa, the only civilian who has a home on the estate with Richard Nixon and his wife, if he's meeting with a group of men, somebody in the United States should tell us who those people are. Are they any way related to the president of the United States, or to shape his mind? He's elected to represent all the people of the United States, and I want to know who the group of men are. And last week's article not only referred to Mr. Sturgeon, but it referred to the problem Howard Hughes is having with his Las Vegas holdings, and they want him to sign letters to the effect of what he wants done with the casinos and so forth, but they want his fingerprints on these letters. And he sent a letter last week, and it still had no fingerprints. And the court made the statement, we don't want a shadow man. Now, we're talking about covert governments and people behind the scenes and people playing roles. Is Howard Hughes alive? Is he dead? Does he have a fingerprint? He owns one of our states. He controls it totally. He's down in the Bahamas where all these people are now. Is there a Howard Hughes? Are these shadow people? Who is Mr. Sturgeon? Who is the shadow man who sends the letters with no fingerprints? Because of my research on assassinations and where the power people go and who is behind it, the people of the United States should keep their eyes open to any articles on the relationship of Richard Nixon to the Bahamas and his weekends there, and it is tied in with who runs the government. Now, maybe if we find out the charges that are laid against Mr. Nixon and the Los Angeles Police Department and work on that, it may lead you to the shadow government. It may lead you to the people that pay for the political campaigns or who say to Rockefeller, well, now you can go, you've got the money, you're a hero. Let's find out who that shadow government is, because, again, we're getting back to 72 elections. Do you really know who you elect, or is it this behind-the-scene group? Don't forget that in the biography called Nixon, Richard Nixon came out of the service, out of law school, and was walking around the San Marino area, and there was an ad in the newspaper, wanted. It was a want ad. He was looking for a job or law office, and the ad read, wanted, one man to run for Senate. And a group of people would put up the money, and he would, in this particular party, it suggested if you're a veteran, it's good. If you're married, that's better. And Richard Nixon answered the ad. Speaking of Richard Nixon's marriage, there was an article in the paper last week about Pat Nixon and her background, and it went into stating, you know, she put herself through college. Her mother had died. She took care of her father and brother and kept house and worked her way through school. And she met Richard Nixon, and he proposed on the first date. You know, this is like Richard Nixon walks into an office where there's these 100 very wealthy people in the Southwest, and that moment he decides he'll run for Senate. He fit the bill. Now, what's going on in the Bahamas when you're talking about power? Oh, one thing before we close, you just got a minute, because there's an article in the paper today. They're running this series called The Vantage Point, Lyndon Johnson's book, and it just came out. And I talked with Marguerite Oswald on the telephone yesterday. It's Lee Harvey Oswald's birthday. He would have been 32 years old.
On Monday, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And on Monday. And we're sort of like her family. I'm the only researcher in the United States that she has any rapport with, and she's met my children, and I've been her home. And she understands what I'm doing. And she said that their installment had come out on LBJ, and it came in our paper today. And she said history is moving a little kinder towards Lee Harvey Oswald, that now Johnson is riding. He doesn't even call him the assassin. So the article came this morning in the paper, and it tells, we'll have to go into this next week, on the arm twisting of Earl Warren that Lyndon Johnson did, and we talked about a little before. But he goes into the murder in Dallas, and he said, led by one of the most urgent tasks facing me after I assumed office, I'm quoting the book from Lyndon Johnson now, was to assure the country that everything possible was being done to uncover the truth surrounding the assassination of John Kennedy. We were troubled, puzzled, and an outraged nation who wanted to know the facts. Led by the Attorney General, who wanted no stone unturned, the FBI worked on the case 24 hours a day. Some very disturbing facts about Lee Harvey Oswald were coming to light, notably that he considered himself a communist. Second, he gave up his citizenship to live in Russia. He returned with a Russian wife, and he hoisted the banner of Fidel Castro. What did all this mean? Lyndon Johnson is asking. Was Oswald the killer? If so, was he carrying out orders from someone else? Did he have accomplices? Did he act alone? There was hope, at least, that Oswald would supply the answers. But Jack Ruby walked calmly into the Dallas jail and shot Lee Harvey Oswald, and the answers were lost, perhaps for all time. Now, Marguerite Oswald nearly flipped. She was anxious to see the book, because he no longer is called the assassin. The answers were lost. The researchers know the answers weren't lost, but Lyndon Johnson got very soft on Lee Harvey Oswald, and Marguerite Oswald felt very good that it's only been 7 years. And he wouldn't dare say that Lee Harvey Oswald shot the president. And time will prove that he didn't shoot anybody. But Lyndon Johnson has carefully worded his book that, you know, he's not as sure. If you read what he said much earlier, it was a complete turnabout face. Now, what he was saying was that Oswald considered himself a communist and had the banner of Fidel Castro. Oswald was an agent of the CIA, and he was not a communist except on a record he made with another provocateur in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We've talked about that. He was allowed into the Soviet Union, our State Department paid his way back. He only met with wealthy oil people. Everybody he was with had security clearances with the FBI and the CIA. Lyndon Johnson is still going into the fact. And then he gives another motive. He said maybe Oswald Castro, with Oswald dead, we won't know what happened, he said, but there's stories that Castro was smarting over the Bay of Pigs and accused us of sending CIA agents to assassinate him. And maybe they sent Oswald back as retaliation. Well, I think it was the other way around. There were a lot of anti-Castro people that were mad at John Kennedy for not killing Castro. And they wanted to kill Kennedy because we withdrew from the Bay of Pigs. It was the other way around. He's taken the whole motive. But the point is that history is going to deal more kindly every day with Lee Harvey Oswald. And Lyndon Johnson goes into how he begged Earl Warren to bring up that change of subject. Now, there was one thing I did want to get. This is one thing. There's 10 things. Do we have time, Gloria?
We have about 4 minutes.
Okay, there's 3 new books that I got. If you have a pencil, write those down. One was called Inspection for Disarmament, and the author is Melman. And that is the book about Germany disarming after World War I. And we refer to that briefly on several shows, and it shows how they secretly, with their covert government, clandestine government, said, we will not obey the Versailles decision, we're going to arm, and it tells how they went about and took the courts and killed the 400 political people who were opposed to rearming Germany and how Hitler got into power. I received that book, Inspection for Disarmament. It's a historical story of Germany, but when you read the Pentagon paper, after the Geneva Accord, Eisenhower came home and said, we can't go by that. We'll send in covert men. We'll do it our way. And he set up his clandestine army, no different than the first, after the first war. And we keep repeating the same pattern until we have a second army, a second person running this country behind the elected officials. Another book which I received was that book called Search for Justice, by Leigenthaler, Leigenthaler, Search for Justice. That is the book on the trial of James Ray, Sirhan, and Clay Shaw, 3 men covering the trial separately that said the American system, the trial system, just can't work. It isn't meant to work. Incidentally, I talked to, did I mention Bernard Fensterall, James Ray's lawyer, yesterday?
Yes.
And he says the case is going good. There's a chance that the case may be opened up, that he was in Tennessee last week, and there is a new judge, and on the basis of this book, the judge may be forced to open. So, see, the individual researchers are helping the process.
Oh, may be forced to reopen the Ray
case.
Because
it's been academic, you know, the judges could say, no, this is the way it stands. But now a book has been published that was talked on a national TV show that Ray has said there was a conspiracy and that the justice in America doesn't work. So now the judge has to prove the justice works, so that Bernard Fensterall is excited that maybe opened up. And the third book was the one I mentioned by Ed Saunders called The Family. And if you buy it, because it is a bad book, and study it, and study how your mind is shaped, we could do maybe have some seminars and meet people on the weekend that want to talk about these things. If they buy these books, there's not enough radio time. If they buy them and wrap, we're going to set a date soon. People are anxious. We'll set a date. And maybe once a month have a study section of people will read these things. And then I will show you the research and how one side of these books are, like Houghton's book on the assassination of Robert Kennedy, how one-sided it is. We'll analyze how these books get out on the market and tell you they have thousands of witnesses and all the documents, and they're very highly selective. And they never stick to the ballistics or the killings or like in Los Angeles and the Sharon Tate thing, where the bodies were actually moved, that Sharon Tate was at the door and they said she wasn't, and things were placed over their head that they said weren't there. The actual evidence, when the police comes in and reports the scene of a crime, the way it's laid out, how a book ignores all that and just goes on to its own conclusions, how they just keep winding away.
All right, I guess we can take up where you left off this week, but I imagine there'll be more news by next week's program. Thank you again, May.
Okay.